The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of Voice of Vashon. Welcome to Adventures in Recovery. I'm Tom Walston, your host for the next half hour. I truly am looking forward to spending 30 minutes with you each and every Tuesday at 1:30 on the Voice of Vashon, while we explore the many ways we can recover and move toward having a happier life. My background includes working for actually over 15 years as a substance use disorder, now a clinical supervisor. I've had the good fortune to work at Vashon Youth and Family Services for over 5 years, alongside several committed therapists and clinicians that are really passionate about their work. VYFS was founded in 1977, and Vashon Youth and Family Services fosters a thriving community of emotionally healthy and resilient children, youth, adults, and families. And we serve Vashon's most vulnerable populations and communities, particularly those who face systemic barriers to accessing services and or belong to groups historically excluded from resources, recovery, and power. Services and programming we offer include infant mental health, child, youth, and family counseling, seniors counseling, Hispanic and Latinx support services, case management, substance use disorder assessment and treatment, homeless prevention, medical and ferry vouchers, and emergency financial assistance. So, every Tuesday we talk about how one defines recovery. Well, one definition is the action or process of regaining possession or control of something stolen or lost. Recovery is a process of change through which individuals improve their health and wellness, live a self-directed life, and strive to reach their full potential. So, just to remind you that recovery goes beyond just dealing with substances. I mean, after all, let's face it, we're pretty much all recovering from something. I'm a person in long-term recovery from substance abuse. And one's recovery could also be from past emotional or physical scars as well. It could be grief. How about recovery from a personal injury or physical or emotional? How about recovering from being abused, whether it be emotional, physical, sexual? How about recovering from abandonment issues? So we've all got our stuff. Let's just put it that way. And in fact, I want to encourage those of you that have joined me on New Year's Eve. We started Dry January. Some of you hopped on the bandwagon and wanted to try out Dry January and just give up their use of alcohol for the month of January to appreciate all the benefits that that would bring. And we covered that in the beginning of the month. It includes better sleep, better eating habits, and it offers a lot more opportunity to do something different with your time, like going for a walk or enjoying nature, or going to the gym, or working out, or playing cards, or doing something fun with other people. So we're all motivated for different reasons to practice a dry January or maybe put down the bottle. And I'm very happy to have as a guest today a gentleman that's really had some real strong motivation to remain sober for a little while. Not that there's been any legal issues such as DUIs or anything like that, but the person we're going to be speaking with today, and I'm going to refer to him as John Doe out of respect to his anonymity and to HIPAA laws and things like that. But John Doe, I'm glad you're with us today, and we're going to hear a little bit about your story and what motivated you to maybe put down the bottle for a while. How you doing, John?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Tom. Pretty good today. So you want to know what motivated me to put down the bottle?
Pretty much, well, yeah. I know you had some strong motivation.
Very strong motivation. So it all started, I just one day just felt out of energy. You know, a little bit. The next day, a little more. Then after about a month, I mean, it was just, my ass was kicked just mowing the lawn, and it's the size of a postage stamp, you know. And so I said, I better make an appointment with the doctor. And so I went and saw the doctor, and they did a bunch of tests, and it looked like it might have been a cancer, but as further more testing, they found it was definitely, it was my liver. I had been taking medications that was not good for my liver.
Mm-hmm.
And also I had a little blood disorder, but the majority, it was drinking. I would have been fine if had I not drank.
So would that fall under the category that you were taking medications that weren't good for the liver? Was alcohol part of that medication?
The medication, it was for a gout medicine, and it's really bad on your liver. It's an allopurinol is what it's called. And I was taking the handfuls of that, you know, and drinking, which the two combination is really lethal. And that lasted a couple of years until, well, I ended up where I'm at. So the choice to put down the bottle was, there was nowhere else to go. There's no way I can cut back, or there was none of that. It was like the doctor said, he said, for every drink you take, you're taking 2 or 3 days off your life.
Oh my gosh. So let's backtrack a little bit. Where would you say your alcohol use began? And I'm curious to share with our listeners the frequency and the amount.
Okay, I started drinking, you know, beer, I don't know, 16, 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I always looked older than my older brother, so it's kind of a funny joke that him and his buddies, you know, hey, get your little brother to go buy us some booze. And I was on a traveling dart league for a tavern when I was, 19.
Okay.
You know, never carded, nothing. I mean, it was a different time. But, And then, you know, as I got a little older, I kind of liked the whiskey cokes. And then, so it was like a couple beers, a couple whiskey cokes. Then it was 3 whiskey cokes and no beer. And then 4, you know, until where I was drinking probably, a good pint a night, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little. If I buy about a half gallon, it would last maybe 3 days, you know. That,
okay.
That was hitting it hard. You know, 3 days, maybe 4, but it was like 3 days. So yeah, I was drinking a lot, but it never got me in trouble. I've been married, same woman for 35 years, great marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I never got a DUI, never got in trouble with the law. And I was tested for my job, you know, they did urine analysis for pot, and also they did, here in the last 10 years, they started doing the breathalyzer in the morning too. I always passed that. So,
so just to I was going to say, just to inform our listeners, if I'm not mistaken, your career for X number of years was in the construction business. Is that correct?
Yes, it was.
So you worked for an outfit that basically is building freeways, doing some pretty major construction.
Yeah, and I was a crew leader, so, I mean, I was responsible for people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is ultimately, you know, my job site, and, you know. So, I mean, I could, you know, and you hear stories, you know, and I had a buddy that, you know, hey, man, he'd wake up in the morning, he didn't have, you know, a couple belts of vodka straight, you know, he'd just be a wreck, you know. And he got clean a few years back, but, you know, I wasn't like that. I mean, I didn't drink on the job. I didn't do any of that. But, you know, I get off work, you know, swing by the liquor store, you know, that, you know. But I always took care of business, you know. Maybe I could have been way more productive, but I was pretty productive. I guess you call that a high-functioning alcoholic, I suppose. So, but it was in your face when the doctor said, you know, hey, man, it's your decision. And I chose to want to live and see my grandkids grow up, you know, and I just didn't want to. Keep that up and die real soon, or stop and see, you know, still there's going to be more stuff down the road. But so, it was pretty easy for me to just quit. I did have a few, urges. You know, especially around the holidays, you know, I mean, and, you know, there's alcohol in my house. You know, my wife, she has a gin and tonic, and, you know, there's some vodka and stuff like that. But, you know, it didn't really bother me. But every once in a while it would, you know, it's like, but, you know, as far as not having it around or in the house, that's kind of unrealistic.
Well, not only that, but you brought up two things that could very much be a trigger for people, especially one of them was over the holidays. I mean, the holidays can be a very stressful period for some people, and for a lot of people, actually, the holidays aren't quite the fun, happy, you know, time of year that the media and everybody wants us to believe, and some false expectations that some of us have. So it can be a very
My holidays great.
No, I know. It sounds like you've got a really good supportive family. I'm just saying, some people out there, holidays aren't quite so rosy. And another thing is, too, it's the tradition. Well, we always have hot toddies at Christmas, or we always have spiked eggnog, or we always have this. So, you know, you have that to deal with. Hot buttered rum. There you go.
That was my wife made the homemade batter. God, it was delicious.
Oh, yeah. See, it almost is a ritual. So I totally understand why you had a couple of triggers, and especially when it's right in front of your face. But
yeah,
the real beauty is you got through it.
Oh, and yeah. It just hits for, like, you know, maybe 10 seconds or something. And then you're like, no. Then you get, your mind goes somewhere else, and then it's gone. But I imagine for the rest of my life, you know, I guess they say, you know, you'll always want that.
That's very true. And I just wanted to mention that because some of our listeners, you know, don't really know how to respond to trigger. But the fact of the matter is that they're always going to be temporary. Go for a walk. Or just, like you said, it only lasted for a few seconds. But those urges can be strong. And you overcame those, and I really hand it to you for being able to do that.
It's the urge to drink or the urge to die. And, you know, I'm not really too cool on the latter. So, I chose life, and life is for sure without alcohol. I mean, there's definitely the program I'm trying to get into is the liver transplant list up at the University of Washington, and that is very stringent on, you know, they do these tests, blood tests, and they could tell, you know, going back months, exactly when you drink and how much you drink. So you can't fool them. And, you know, all that'll do is get me, you know, rejected from the list and then die anyway. So, I mean, there's all kinds of motivation for me to not drink.
So for those that have just joined us, we have on your show John Doe, who has been with us today because we're talking about Dry January. Well, Joe had some very serious motivation. He was starting to feel a little bit run down and tired. So he, like most people, would go to the doctor and after a series of tests, it was determined that he needed a new liver. So in order to qualify as a recipient of a liver, the University of Washington Hospital requires some various, they want to make sure you're serious about getting a liver. They're not just going to be dishing them out to people. So as for part of Joe to remain completely abstinent and to prove to the hospital that he's serious about this and committed to receiving a new liver, he has chosen to remain totally abstinent. And don't think that he isn't being tested, because he has to have regular urinalysis done so that the hospitals can prove to the hospitals that, yeah, there's no alcohol in my system. I'm doing what I'm told. And that's just one of a series of many, many, many hoops you're having to jump through, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a urine test and a blood test. So, I mean, there's no hiding. And it's just one of, I equate it to spokes in a wheel. There's a lot of spokes. And you got to, each spoke, you know, has to be dealt with. You know, I mean, there's so many scans, and it's a lot. And I think part of the acceptance or psychological test is if you can complete the pre-screening or the screening, then yeah, you made it. Because it's definitely trying. There's been many, many days where I just said, you know, wanted to. You can't bleep. But many days I just want to say, screw it, you know, I'm just going to drink. This is ridiculous. And I didn't, but, you know, it works out the next day. You know, just persevere.
Well, and you're keeping your eye on the prize. You mentioned earlier your motivation is your family. You want to see your grandkids. You want to grow up with them. They want to have a healthy grandpa. You've got a couple of kids. Your wife that's been with you for umpteen years, God knows how, but no, I'm kidding.
I ask myself that all the time.
And John, it's not just the refraining from alcohol. Don't you have to go through a series of tests? I remember you sharing with me the fact that you have to have X number of liters of liquid extracted from you on a weekly basis.
Yes, that's another part of the failing liver. It's called ascites, and it's where the liver can't filter like liquids, and so it basically leaks out. It builds up pressure because the liver can't filter, so it leaks out of the hepatic vein and into my abdominal cavity, and it causes discomfort, but hernias, because there's so much pressure on your abdominal wall, which I had a hernia. I had to have that surgically fixed because of this. And then every week, it started out maybe 4 liters, and that was for like a month. Then it went to 5 liters for a month. Now we're at 6. It's not uncommon for me to get tapped and get 8 or 9, you know, that's usually, if I get under 7, it's a day to celebrate, but that's few and far between. It's usually 7-8 liters of ascitic fluid they pull out of your abdomen every week.
Wow.
it's not fun. It's, you know, needles in your stomach, they numb it first with lidocaine, but that hurts. You know, and then put the catheter in you, and every once in a while, when they're sucking it out, it'll catch the bowel or something. That hurts. Like, it's hell on earth. I mean, there's another dark side to this too. You know, like, how much longer can I do this? Something's got to change.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the dark side. I don't like going there, but it does cross my mind.
Well, you look at the success and everything you've gone through. I mean, you've invested a lot in this whole procedure, in this whole process.
Oh, a lot. And, I mean, energy, pain, money.
Yep.
It's insane.
Well, a couple of things to think about, and that is, number one, you're worth it. And number two, if there's a silver lining behind any of this, it's the fact that you're probably going to have a brand new, it might not be a brand new liver, but it's like going to a used...
A good old used Toyota Camry liver, you know. You know, still got a few miles left, you know. Might smoke a little bit, but, you know, it'll be okay.
That's okay.
For maybe another 15 years, I'd be happy.
Well, not only that, but when you go down for your extractions, you probably walk out of there about 10 to 12 pounds lighter.
Oh, more than that. More than that. It's about each pound or each liter of acidic fluid weighs 2.2 pounds.
Holy smokes. Seven, that's four. So that's 15 pounds.
I give birth every week to 17 pounds. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it's funny because when I get up off the table after they do it, you know, my belt, I have to go when I tighten my belt up. It's like, it's a big difference. And then, yeah, it's kind of funny.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, it's not funny, but I mean, it is what it is. And then, after they do it, it feels like for a day and a half, 2 days, it feels like my stomach was used as a pinata by 100 kids with big, heavy backs. It just feels like every square inch of my torso has just been beat.
Oh, my gosh.
Just everything moving back into place, you know. It's just, yeah.
Oh, I can imagine. See, these are the kind of questions that I think people always are curious about, but they just don't really have anybody to ask these to. And ladies and gentlemen, we have a live person waiting for a new liver with us on the phone today. And I was going to ask you about, let's see, do you know how far into the process you are right now?
I'm fairly certain I'm about three quarters of the way.
Nice.
I mean, I have the end of the month, I have these 2 days of back-to-back testing up there. I mean, it's one test after the next, you know, cardio, you know, MRI on the heart, echo of the heart, lungs, make sure, you know, my lungs are good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you lay down, all that ascites fluid pushes up into your lungs, and then you get thoroparasitesis. It's where they got to drain your lungs, and then that's really bad. So I'm not there yet, knock on wood.
Well, you've learned a lot of medical technology too, haven't you?
Oh, God, more than I ever thought I could ever possibly learn. And
lots of big words.
And I wished I didn't have to.
I know it. But, you know, were you ever, speaking of the lungs, I'm just curious, were you ever a smoker, or did you have to give that up?
I was, and I quit 15 years ago.
Okay.
And, more than that, maybe.
Okay.
I think it was $6 a pack when I quit. Me and the wife both quit. I went to the 7-Eleven, got each two packs of cigarettes, and it came to, you know, like $26 or something. And I was like, oh, no. This is insane.
That was so crazy.
Another one, cold turkey.
Another what?
I just quit cold turkey.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, I mean, it's crazy nowadays, and you should see the price of cigarettes on the island here. I think it's like $15 a pack or something like that.
Yeah.
And this is coming from a person that used to be a pack of Marlboros a day. And
yeah, Marlboro Red, that was my brand.
Oh, I thought we knew each other. but I'm here to tell you, since I quit, there's this app you can put on your phone called Smoke Free. And since I quit, I've saved $24,000, and that is when cigarettes were $7 a pack, because I was buying them on the reservation. So that's, you know, a lot of money. Somebody said, well, do you have that 20-some thousand dollars today? It's like, no, but I sure have taken some great trips over to Europe and back, and I've traveled a lot more, and I've done a lot of other productive things with that money.
Yeah, so, whoever said must have been art, still smokes.
Oh, yeah, of course. So
trying to justify his habit.
Their own habit, yeah. I know. We've all been there. So, John, just to let our viewers know that you may or may not, you're going to get a call sooner or later saying, okay, get down here. We found a donor. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it does. It works that way. To my knowledge, I go up there once a month for the support group that most of them, I mean, 90% are all post-transplant. And some of them said they've been called 6-7 times. You know, they get a phone call in the middle of the night. Come, we got liver for you. And they get there, they take the Hexa soap bath and do everything, and then just to be told, oh, you were standby, you know. So they always have a standby come in case, like, the recipient, you know, they do a real quick test on you before they do the surgery. And if anything's wrong, you know, high blood pressure, boom, they'll kick you and then take the alternate. So, and that, to me, that's kind of, oh boy, that would be really a emotional roller coaster.
No kidding.
Not that I've been on one already for like the last 8 months, but imagine that, you know, go home. Damn. You know,
it's just, yeah.
You're all geared up for it, and then no. And, you know, it's like, wow. Yeah, so that is what it is. You know, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, John, you're a tremendously strong and resilient man, and, you know, my hat goes off to you, and I know you're going to get that liver sometime in the very near future, because you've been doing all the footwork and all the work. So, ladies and gentlemen,
I'll just let you know whenever if I even get placed on the list, I'll let you know.
Well, that'd be great. We'd love to follow your progress with that and have you back on sometime in the future. And having said that, getting the signal from our famous engineer here, Truman, that I only have a couple minutes left to wrap it up. So, John, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, you actually heard it first here on Adventures in Recovery from a person that is actually waiting for a fresh, might not be a fresh, brand new liver, but it's going to be a lot better than what you got.
Exactly. And if I could, Tom, if anybody's out there listening and having some liver questions that need answering, they can go to LifeRing Recovery on Wednesdays at 5:30. There's a Zoom meeting with, it's called The Liver Spot, and it's all things liver-related, from alcohol use. And there's a forum of people that have been there, and they'll answer all your questions. I mean, I highly, highly suggest that.
Thank you, John. Once again, that's just sign on to www.lifering.org, and you can join into any meetings. The meeting that John attends is a specialty meeting for people with liver issues, and it's called Liver Spots. And that's once again on Wednesdays at, did you say 6:30?
5:30.
Liver Spots on LifeRing.org.
5:30 to 7, and it's everybody that's on that site is in the same boat. Some are better off than you. Some are worse. Yeah, they'll even broadcast, you know, themselves from the hospital room, you know. I mean, sick, real sick people. But, I mean, They're great people that answer all your questions, because you're going to have them.
Well,
you'll have more questions than you'll get answers to.
Well, we're out of time, and you are a great guy, John, and thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you. And, folks, once again, I love all of you, and I look forward to having you tune in to Voice of Vashon every Tuesday at 1:30 in the afternoon for our little half-hour show here. Tom Walston signing off for now. Bye, everyone.